Join me in Deuteronomy chapter 29, and we're going to go back and start at verse number 1 in just a moment. This is coming very close to the end of Moses' final address to the people of Israel before he dies and they go on into the promised land under the leadership of Joshua. And so he starts kind of wrapping things up with a theme of blessing and cursing, because there's going to be this ceremony that takes place at Shechem, at Mount Ebal and Gerizim, as soon as the Israelites get into the promised land. Half of the tribes will stand on one mountain and talk about the blessings, and the other tribes will stand on the other mountain talking about the cursing. They'll also put up some standing stones that will be whitewashed, and certainly all of the book of Deuteronomy is going to be on those stones, possibly even more of Moses' books. So we are going to see more of this theme of blessing and cursing now. So keep your eyes and your ears open for that. Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 1. These are the words of the covenant that he who is commanded Moses to make with the people of Israel in the land of Moab, because they're in the plains of Moab. They're in this little pocket underneath the hills of Araim, or Mount Pisgah, on the east side of the Jordan River. Jericho's on the far side of the river to the west. So they're in that little pocket, and Moses is addressing them. Besides the covenant that he had made with them at Horeb. So this is a reminder that this is kind of the review of the original covenant God made with the Israelis 40 years ago, because this is the 40th year of the Exodus. But they had the original covenant given to them 40 years ago at Mount Sinai. Verse 2. Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, "You have seen all that he who is did before your eyes in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh, to all his servants, and to all his land. The great trials that your eyes saw, the signs, and those great wonders." Now that's specifically for the leadership. The people who are in their 50s, maybe a few of them that are down in their upper 40s, were teenagers and the upper part of their first decade of life whenever the Exodus occurred. Well, they're the leaders now. And so they're the ones that Moses is appealing to. Remember what you saw. Remember what you experienced. Verse 4. "But to this day, he who is has not given you a heart to understand, or eyes to see, or ears to hear." Now that's Moses saying, and still, a lot of you are having problems in this area of trusting God. And that's true. Even though the first generation all died out because of their lack of faith, their lack of trust, the next generation is also deficient in trusting God. And we will see that contribute to the sin cycle that we'll start talking about once we get into the book of Judges very shortly. But notice Moses says, your heart doesn't understand, because remember, for Israeli people, heart is where you make your choices. But even the things you're seeing, you're not really seeing them. The things you're hearing, you're not really hearing them. That actually becomes part of the prophetic critique of Israel through the centuries that follow. Having ears, they do not hear. Having eyes, they do not see. Because God says, if they really did, they might turn, and then in their repentance, I'd forgive them and fix the problem. Jesus picks up on that too, by the way, because he talks of this idea, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. So Don't just use them to let the sound bounce off your eardrum. Actually do something about it. Verse 5. I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. That's Moses' testimony. I've been your leader for the past 40 years out here in the middle of nowhere. Your clothes have not worn out on you. Your sandals have not worn off your feet. Now that's amazing. I have some clothes that are pretty old, but they're not 40 years old. Well, I'm going to correct myself there. I do have some of my original military gear. When I first went in, they wouldn't fit me now. That probably contributed to them lasting so long, is that they were just put away. They were stored away. But here, the point is, you're wearing this stuff day after day for 40 years, and they're not wearing out because God is taking care of you. Verse 6, you've not eaten bread, not regular bread. Remember, they're taking the manna every day and grinding that up as their flour and using that to make their bread. But they haven't been planting grain fields and harvesting grain fields. The land wouldn't even have supported that. So you haven't been eating bread. You haven't drunk wine or strong drink, meaning you haven't had vineyards. You haven't had orchards that you could harvest some of the fruit and use it to make wine and use it to make liquor, because you're not in the land. You're in the wilderness. And why? That you may know that I am He who is your God. So that's God's message through Moses to these people, is I've kept you out here away from everything normal, use that in air quotes there, so that you could understand I'm the one taking care of you. Verse 7. When you came to this place, Sihon, the king of Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us to battle, but we defeated them. And of course, that happened because of God. We took their land and gave it for an inheritance to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and half of the tribe of Manasseh. Therefore, keep the words of this covenant and do them, that you may prosper in all that you do. So the idea is God has been providing for you even during these past 40 years of a timeout. Miraculously, He's been taking care of you. Just keep trusting Him to do that when you go into the promised land and you start planting your crops and planting your orchards and harvesting in your vineyards and all of that stuff, and you start taking on life as, quote, normal, end quote. Don't forget God. Verse 10. You are standing today, all of you, before He who is your God, the heads of your tribes. So there's 12 tribes, 13 if you count the tribe of Aaron, the priestly tribe, the Levitical tribe. All the men of Israel, your elders, your officers, these would be the leaders of the subgroups within those tribes. Your little ones, so your minor kids, your wives, and the sojourner who is in your camp. Now, the sojourners here are not people that have jumped in to the encampment recently. They've been there since the start. You might remember way back in the description of the Exodus, this is clear back in Exodus chapter 12, that it was not just the Israeli tribes that left Israel. There were a whole bunch of hangers-on, a bunch of what typically is referred to as the mixed multitude. People that saw getting out of Egypt was to their benefit. And so going with the Israelis was their best choice. Well, they've been raising their own generation of family. And so some of those sojourners are in the camp. They're not Israelis, unless have converted, in which case they would have been adopted into one of the tribes. But these sojourners are described as being the one who chops your wood to the one who draws your water. So because they are not ethnic Israelis, because they are not part of the Israeli group that's going to inherit property, they become, quote, servant class, end quote. They're not slaves. They work for the Israelis. And so that's the descriptions of the work they do. We'll later see in the history books that this comes common practice, that the harder labor, hand labor, the tough, sweaty stuff goes to non-Israelis who are being paid to do that stuff. But anyway, the point is, so that you may enter into the sworn covenant of He who is your God, which He who is your God is making with you today, that He may establish you today as His people, and that He may be your God, as He promised you, and as He swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. So Moses, speaking on behalf of God, says, everybody listening in today, Israeli young, old, non-Israeli, that's part of the larger culture, all of you are going to be invited to retake the covenant oath to do what God says, so that God will be your God and you will be His people, because that is what God had in mind when He talked to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to make a people group that would be holy. Remember, that's the fancy word for being set aside for something very specific, to be a holy people group. So here's their chance to say, I'm on board with that. Verse 14, it is not with you alone that I am making this sworn covenant, but with whoever is standing here with us today before He who is our God, and with whoever is not here with us today. So if some of those sojourners, those mixed multitude people, want to join in, they can. They can become part of this covenant community. But Moses knows that there will be future generations, and each individual has to come to their own decision to live according to the covenant. They have to make their choice. Our parents may have wanted all sorts of good things for us. They may have even made arrangements for some good things for us. But it only becomes real when we, as thinking adults, choose that same path. That's the only way it becomes real. So that's what Moses is talking about here. Verse 16. You know how we lived in the land of Egypt, how we came through the midst of the nations through which you passed, you know, the different people groups. And you have seen their detestable things, their idols of wood and stone, of silver and gold, which were among them. So now he's definitely speaking to the people who have had firsthand experience fighting in the wars and taking over the properties of these pagan peoples. I'm thinking particularly about the Amorites, I think. In those properties, there were idols made of wood, made of stone, made of silver, made of gold, or some combination thereof. Pagan worship idols. And they've been told not to let those things continue existing. They're supposed to destroy them because they are a trap of temptation to an Israeli to worship those same pagan gods and goddesses. And of course, the Israeli covenant says, you will have no other gods other than me. and you won't make idols. You won't make images of any of these gods and goddesses, and actually even of him. Now, verse 18, Moses says, beware lest there be among you a man or a woman, so individuals of either gender, doesn't matter, or a clan, that's an extended family, is the best way to think of it. I grew up in a clan where I knew my great-grandmother on my dad's side, and I knew her sisters because they were long-lived. And so when we got together, there were like uncles and great uncles and cousins galore. And so it was a monster extended family. That's what a clan is. That's what he's talking about here. So even if some sort of extended family is going to tempt you to do some of these things, or worst, or a tribe, you know, an entire tribe, which the tribe of Benjamin, a significant portion of it is going to be involved in a really bad episode of faithlessness. But he says, beware lest any of these things whose heart is turning away today from he who is our God to go on and serve the gods of these nations. So beware of any group, no matter how small, no matter how large, that might want to go down that path of idolatry. Beware lest there be among you a root bearing poisonous and bitter fruit. Now that is an interesting phrase there, mostly I think because it shows up in the book of Hebrews. It's alluded to. It's not a quote. Hebrews chapter 12, which is it's a protracted warning to Jewish people not to abandon faith in Jesus and go back into Judaism as their means of salvation. And so he writes in chapter 11 about the faith, and then chapter 12 that you need to stick with Jesus. And in verse 15 of Hebrews chapter 12, he says, see to it, that's the beware concept, see to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that's faith in the Jesus, salvation, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by it many be defiled. The Hebrew writer was thinking about this warning back here in Deuteronomy 29. Because what happens is, sometimes in a field crop, you might have a plant that looks a little bit like the crop that you intended, but it's actually not just simply a weed, it is a poisonous weed. Think about Jesus telling the parable of the wheat and the tares. Tares are actually a pseudo wheat. They look like wheat until they produce some very nasty, bitter, poisonous seeds. And so we don't need that mixed in with the true faith. We don't want people who are showing allegiance to other gods and goddesses. Verse 19 of our Deuteronomy 29, who, when he hears the words of this sworn covenant, blesses himself in his heart, saying, I shall be safe, though I do walk in the stubbornness of my heart. Meaning there will be some people say, I'm good to go. Yeah, I'm worshiping other gods and goddesses. I got other things that I'm focused upon as well. But you know what? I'm good. Nothing's going to happen to me. But Moses says this, this will lead to the sweeping away of moist and dry alike. That imagery always confused me as a kid. Now it makes a little bit more sense when you think about crops. You have some crops that are well watered and nice and green and they're lush. And then maybe not too far away, there's a crop of grain that has not been irrigated, and it, because it's so hot, and dry. That field has turned brown, and it is brittle, and it's also a fire hazard. So if a fire comes flying through there, it's going to just burn up all of the dry crop. But the moist crop, the crop that's been irrigated, it'll escape. It'll fare up underneath that fire. But Moses says here, it won't matter. If you get this faith, this loss of faith because of idolatry, because of being committed to other things than the Lord, then the fire of judgment is just going to go sweeping through everything. Verse number 20. He who is will not be willing to forgive him, but rather the anger of he who is and his jealousy will smoke against that man, and the curses written in this book will settle upon him, and he who is will blot out his name from under heaven. So God's judgment will fall, and it will be thorough. Verse 21, and he who is will single him out from all the tribes of Israel for calamity in accordance with all the curses of the covenant written in this book of the law. So now you're seeing the curses being mentioned here again as part of the theme. And the next generation, your children who rise up after you, and the foreigner who comes from a far land will say, when they see the afflictions of that land and the sickness with which he who is has made it sick, the whole land burned out with brimstone and salt, nothing sown, nothing growing, where no plant can sprout. So he says, you're going to have the next generation come in to that same area that God has judged. And they're going to look around and they're going to be shocked because it is just burned out and salted. It is not prosperous anymore. And this is really a good description of an area not far from where Moses is at as he writes down and speaks these words. They're just a few miles north of the north shore of the Dead Sea. Well, the Dead Sea is very much part of the destruction zone of Sodom and Gomorrah and Adma and Zeboim, the cities of the plain, almost 700 years previous in the time of Abraham because of sin. The South Bay of the Dead Sea is more than likely ground zero for the cities of the plain. And that area, in the time of Moses, and even down to this day today, is burned out. It is dry. It is nasty. Unless you bring, you know, any type of water and supplies in. And it is very much a place of salt. So that's what Moses is talking about. How do I know? Well, because he actually brings it up next. He says, an overthrow like that of Sodom and Gomorrah, Adma and Zeboim, which he who is overthrew in his anger and wrath, all the nations will say, why has he who is done this to this land? What caused the heat of his great anger? And then the people will say, well, it's because they abandoned the covenant of he who is, the God of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them out of the land of Egypt. And then they went and they served other gods and they worshiped them, gods whom they'd not known and whom they were not had allotted to them. And so that's why the anger of he who is was kindled against this land, bringing upon it all the curses written in this book. So that's the point Moses is getting to. He's saying, if you guys go into that promised land and it's prosperous, it's lovely, it's wonderful, beautiful, a land flowing with milk and honey. But if you go in there and you think you're okay to break the covenant, God will come down on you and judge you in a way reminiscent of what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. And the generations that follow you into that land are going to look at the destruction zone and they're going to go, wow, what happened here? And others will say, that's what happens when you blow God's covenant off. And all of that was predicted here in Moses' final address and then written down to include the blessings and the cursing warnings. Verse 28, he who has uprooted them from their land and in anger and fury and great wrath and cast them into another land as they are this day. Now that's very intriguing. Moses, at the direction of the Holy Spirit, writes these words in such a way that the book of Deuteronomy will be read by people, Israelis, in Assyrian captivity and in Babylonian captivity when they're out of the land and God's judgment has come onto them because of their sin. They're under the curse of the law, and they will read these words and go, yeah, that's why we're here. That's why we're in Assyria. That's why we're in Babylon. That's why we're in Persia, is because our predecessors blew off the covenant and received the curse, just like it says in the book of Moses, the book of Deuteronomy. Verse 29, the secret things belong to He who is our God, but the things that are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. So God may keep a few things secret, only to Himself, reveal them to a few key people at times. But when it comes to the judgments, those are pretty blatant. They are open and easily seen by those that follow as to what happens when you blow off a relationship with God. It brings judgment. Mark your place right there. We'll get back into the Word next time.